You can see here in this photo of the Eastern Gate that the gate is walled. It's sealed up, and we're going to talk about that. The Eastern Gate sits just above the small Kidron Valley, directly opposite the Mount of Olives and the Garden of Gethsemane. It's a very short walk down the hill and up the hill through the Kidron Valley to cross from these two high points in that part of Israel, Jerusalem being such a high ground area, and the garden opposite it equally, almost equally high. The next page shows the Eastern Gate, and behind it, the Dome of the Rock, the Islamic Dome of the Rock, which sits on the Temple Mount, and which today, and which has been for a very long time, a very contentious situation, as the Jews clearly claim the Temple Mount, as do the Muslims. Having been blessed and gone to Israel, we were able to get to actually walk onto the Temple Mount. It was not restricted back then. We could walk around and view it. It's a very imposing site. It's probably the dome is probably one of the most imposing sites in Israel, and it makes it recognizable to many people because of its prominence. And you can see how massive it is and how high it sits behind the gate. This photograph may be a little more difficult to see, but it is obviously an aerial view of Jerusalem and the surrounding terrain. And you can see in the photograph the dome. And just to its right, in one of the red markers, you'll see, so here's the dome. Look, it's not so cooperative. Well, the dome is there, and then right here is the Eastern Gate. So that's the picture that we looked at. This is an aerial of that. And Israel Jerusalem has many gates, 8 current gates, and we're going to talk about each of them. What happened? There it is. And the gates in this photograph are identified with those red marks. You can see them circling the city if you look carefully. Let's look down at the bottom of the page, and we'll take a look at the various gates, and I'll make some comments about them. There they are. I'm just going to read them down quickly, and then we'll talk a little bit about them. The Zion Gate on the left, the Jaffa, the New Gate, the Damascus Gate, Herod's Gate, the Lion's Gate, and the Dung Gate, and then at the bottom, the Eastern Gate. The positions of these gates, while not easily seen in the photograph, are this way. The Zion Gate is in the southwestern portion of the city. The Jaffa Gate sits west, on the west side. The New Gate is in the northwest corner, the upper left corner of Jerusalem. The Damascus Gate sits north. Herod's Gate, likewise, also in the north side of the walls. The Lion's Gate, which is also called the Sheep Gate, sits on the eastern side. The Dung Gate on the southeastern side. Now, where does it get its name from, the Dung Gate? Well, you can imagine it gets its name from dung. This is the gate outside of which the refuse of Jerusalem was placed. It was a garbage pit. And the reason they put it there is because the prevailing winds helped to move the stench away from the city. If they had put it on the north side, oh my. So they did a smart thing. They put it on the south side, in the east side, so it would drift away from the city. Okay, they didn't have garbage collection like we have today. Okay, the eastern gate sits obviously in the east. It's also called the Mercy Gate. In the center column is the Hebrew pronunciation, the Hebrew name, I should say, for these gates, and we're going to go through them. The Arabic is on the right. I don't speak Arabic, but I think I can get the pronunciation decently expressed, okay? So the Zion Gate, now Sha'ar is gate. That's the word for gate in Hebrew, so pretty clearly you can see that that's the beginning. So Sha'ar Tzion. Sha'ar Tzion is Zion Gate. And in Arabic, Baba Nabi Daoud. This is interesting. The Muslims look at the Zion Gate, the Sha'ar Tzion, and call it the gate of the prophet David. Daoud is David in Arabic. The Jaffa Gate is Sha'ar Yafo, or Bab el Halil. The new gate is Sha'ar Hadesh, Bab el Jadid. Damascus Gate is Sha'ar Shechem, Bab el Amud. Herod's Gate is Sha'ar Perachim, Bab el Zahira. Lion's Gate is Sha'ar Ha'arayot, Bab el Ashpat. Dung Gate is Sha'ar Ashpat. Ashpat. Okay? That's really Ashpat, but close enough. Bab el Magrabi. The eastern gate is Sha'ar HaRachamim, or Bab el Rachmeh. Very similar to the Hebrew. The walls of the city have an interesting and complex history, and we're not going to get into the particulars of it. It's far too much. It's a study all by itself, just the construction of the walls and the time frame. But various iterations of the walls have happened over the centuries. If you were to look in, if you have the Scofield Bible and any Bible that you might have at home that shows the changes in the walls of Jerusalem over the centuries. I know that the Scofield in the back has Jerusalem in Old Testament times, and then it has Jerusalem in New Testament times. And you can see the changes that were made by the kings over those centuries as Jerusalem's walls expanded. It started out rather small, and then it grew. I mean, Jerusalem is not a very large city. It's very imposing. And when you know the history of it to a degree, it's very impacting. All right, it really is. It really gets to you. So the walls were built for over various periods of time, mostly as fortifications. And their destruction has occurred more than once. In 2 Kings and Jeremiah, we know that the Babylonian king destroyed the walls. In a rebuild of the walls at a certain point in history, Nehemiah supervised a rebuild. He did rebuild of what existed back then in an amazingly short amount of time. There was no supply chain problem back then like we have. Okay, they rebuilt the walls, and this is staggering. And it was a lot to do in 52 days, which is amazing. In 1535, to be precise, I think I was talking to Mark earlier and I said about 1540. I was close. I didn't remember. 1535, Suleiman, who was the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, ordered that the walls be rebuilt. So the walls that we see now, for the most part, are the walls that were rebuilt under his supervision. It took about 4 years to rebuild the entire perimeter as we know it. So if you're in Israel, you can look and you can see that those walls are you know, they're 700 years old. It's pretty amazing. Okay. So there are the names. Okay, we're going to do some quick facts. There is one error on this page, and I'm going to tell you what it is when we get to it. It's a small error, but it is an error. quick facts. The Zion Gate in the 67 war was the entry point for the Israeli defense forces when they captured the city. They came through the Zion Gate. And if you are in Israel and you walk up to the Zion Gate, you can actually see the pockmarks from the gunfire as they fired at the city, at this portal. They're not fixing those. You can see all the holes where the bullets hit. The entrance to Jerusalem through the Zion Gate takes you into one of the four quarters that comprise Jerusalem. Those two quarters that this leads to are the Jewish and the Armenian quarters. You have Christian quarters, you have Jewish quarters, you have Muslim quarters and Armenian quarters, but they're really not quarters. They're really four sections. It's not an evenly divided city, okay? It's not 25% for one, 25% for the other, and so on. There's a disproportionate amount, but there are four distinct sections. And when you walk through, particularly if you're shopping, and there are markets everywhere, there's an endless amount of markets. It's amazing. And you can see when you enter a different section how the people and some of the items change and the food changes. It's very interesting. It's like being at a big mall, okay, in a food court. It's a big food court, though, okay? And there's stuff you can get here that you can't easily get other places. Or if you can, frankly, my experience is that some of the stuff I've had in Israel is so superior to what I can get in the United States. It's pretty staggering at times. I'm from up north. I'm from New York City originally. You probably hear my voice, but New York has pretty much everything you could ever want in the way of food. It's really amazing. And yet with all of that, some of the things I've had in Israel are just better. So, okay, the Jaffa Gate. The Jaffa Gate, as it says here, marks the end of the highway leading from the Jaffa coast and now leads into the Muslim and Armenian quarters. So there's two more sections for access. Now, here's where we have a bit of a change. It says the new gate is about 600 years old. That is not correct. That reference to the new gate is about another gate. I'll call it a minor gate. Okay, it was more of a small portal that was that old. But we do not want to consider the existing new gate, which is a major gate, to be 600 years old. It's not. So what I would do is just cross that out. As far as the history of the new gate, I don't have a precise date for when it originally occurred. The first one that this may have replaced, but the next sentence is actually needs one more change, and change the word remodeled to built, because that's actually when a construction of the new gate occurred. Okay? It's not an ancient gate like some of these others that we're going to talk about. So it is the newest gate, and it was built in 1889. And the reason they built this gate was because they wanted to have better access for people to get to the neighborhoods that were outside the city, particularly the Christian quarter, so they could enter from their homes in the surrounding area and get right into the Christian quarter directly through the new gate. the Damascus Gate. We are familiar with Damascus and the road to Damascus. I'm going to read something here. This is in Acts. Get the page. Acts 9. I'm going to begin with verse 1. This is on, if you have a church Bible, you don't have to turn to it if you don't want to, of course. I'm going to read. It's on page 1160. And it's Acts 9. And you'll know this. Well, you should know this if you don't. Verse 1. And Saul, yet breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Lord, went unto the high priest. This is Saul, not Paul. This is Saul in his most fervent, incredible, high belief in God actions against Christians. Okay? Horrible, horrible things were committed by him. We know this. So what did he do? In verse 2, and desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound unto Jerusalem. So the word's going out to synagogues everywhere. I'm looking for people. I'm looking for these people. I want to arrest them and bring them back. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven, and he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. And the men which journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no man. And Saul arose from the earth, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no man. But they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. Okay. Famous story. This is the beginning of the man we know as Paul. This is the start. Now, almost for a certainty, because there would be no, it would make no other sense. When Paul left Jerusalem to go to Damascus, he went through the Damascus gate, because that's the gate that puts you on the road to Damascus. You know, I mean, he wasn't stopping at, Publix to pick up something to eat on the way, so he might have gotten out of this, not gone directly to the road to Damascus, but he did go to the road. It's also, and it makes complete sense because of where it is, it's also the gate that Jesus almost assuredly walked through on his way to Golgotha for his crucifixion. No other gate makes sense. There would be no reason to go around a different gate and delay it. The procession would have taken him right clearly straight to Calvary. It is the busiest of the gates. It has, as you can think, it has one large opening and then two small portals on either side. So it handles quite a bit of traffic. Okay. It's all foot traffic. Okay. Moving on to, Herod's Gate. And that leads to the Muslim quarter of the city. It's also known as the Flowers Gate. Herod had nothing to do with its construction. Zero. The reason it got its name is because there's a church nearby, a magnificent church. And people mistakenly thought that the church was Herod's palace. So they called it Herod's Gate. But it had nothing to do with Herod. And the name has never changed. So the story is a good story because the name never changed. Okay. They could have called it Warren's Gate if they'd known Warren back then. But Warren probably didn't live in a house that looked like that church, so you know, it probably wouldn't have happened. This is the same Herod, by the way, as you likely know, to whom Jesus was brought by Pilate. Okay, I'm going to read something very quickly in Luke 28. Let's see if I can get there real fast. I don't want to take... How are we doing on time? We're rolling. We're not going to get through this. There was no intention of getting through this entire handout today. That's not... We're not... There's no way we're going to do that. This is a start. We'll go as far as we can go. If I can find what I'm looking for... I'm almost there. There it is. Okay. Let me see. Oops. Okay. 23:6. In line with what I just said about Pilate and Herod, in Luke 23, in verse 6, when Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see him of a long season, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him, and Herod with his men of what set him at naught, and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. The next gate, the Lion's Gate. It's also known as St. Stephen's Gate, because outside this gate was where Stephen was stoned to death. And that stoning was viewed by, at the time, Saul. The Lion's Gate leads to the Via Dolorosa, which is the pathway that Jesus took as he walked to his crucifixion. During that same Six-Day War in 1967, the paratroopers, the Israeli paratroopers, came through this gate. Okay. The Dung Gate, we've talked about the Dung Gate, the gloriousness of the Dung Gate. It's interesting, it does lead to the Temple Mount, the Dung Gate, and to the western wall of the Temple Mount. The western wall, the Wailing Wall. People do make a mistake in regard to the Wailing Wall. At least I know I've heard people say this, and it's an honest kind of misunderstanding. People think that the Wailing Wall, because of its incredibly important nature, its spiritual significance to Jews particularly, was part of the temple. But that's not the case. It's actually the remaining wall, the outside wall of the courtyard wall. That's what it represents. But it's the largest remnant that we see. And it is quite an amazing thing. Having seen it, having been to it, it's very interesting. As I've said before, in regard to Orthodox Jewry controls the Wailing Wall area completely. So the Wailing Wall is a big wall, and then it has a huge open area in front of it. So it's an enormous open area, just like a big concrete pad, very big, like a big parking lot, but no cars. And as you look at the wall to your right, is a lane with You know, like it's like being at Disney, okay? A lane with upright stands. And while I, as a man, or any men who are watching, could do with complete unbridled access, you can just walk up to the wall. Women can't do that. They're funneled to the right side, and they can only access that corner of the wall going down that restricted pathway, and it's controlled. It's the same principle, the same thinking that Orthodox Jewry has in the synagogue. Men and women cannot worship together. It's not allowed. They have to be separated. And they're separated at the Wailing Wall, too. If they had their way, the Jews would build a second story, and the women would go upstairs and look down on the Wailing Wall separately from the men who are standing on the ground. Because that's how it is in synagogues. At least the old synagogues. They built the second floor, and the women went to the second floor, never to sit with the men, because women were considered and still are considered by Orthodox Jews as a distraction in prayer. My personal opinion, as a Jew, not an Orthodox Jew, is that it's absurd. And I've talked to, and I said this before, I've talked to Orthodox Jews who feel the same way, but they don't have a choice. If they want to go to an Orthodox synagogue, unfortunately, they're going to be separated. So all women, whether it's a two-year-old girl or a 100-year-old great-great-grandmother, they have to go sit someplace else. Okay. All right, we're at the Dung Gate. Makes sense. Solomon's stables, which were vast, were very close to this gate, of course, because we need to clean out the stable. You got to put the stuff someplace. And the Dung Gate was the place. Okay. You can see where it says there since the second century. Before the second century, who knows? They probably just dumped it outside wherever it was convenient. Then they got a little wiser and said, we can help the situation by bringing it here. Okay, on to the Eastern Gate, also called the Golden Gate or the Mercy Gate. This is kind of interesting here, and we're going to read this little bit down here. Suleiman, who rebuilt the walls of the city, also sealed up the Eastern Gate. We're not actually precise on what year that walling up occurred. So we take it over a period of time. Sometime, you know, even though the city walls were rebuilt in 1535, there was some work, other work done on the walls prior to the official building of that, and it continued beyond the completion of the walls. So somewhere between 1520 and 1560, 65, somewhere in there, this gate was sealed. Now, let's read along with this, because this is in a nutshell what caused Suleiman to say, oh, I think we need to do something. The most plausible, let me get down here so that people who are watching, you know, they can actually see this too. Okay, we're down at the bottom of the page. So we have many stories as to why. These are the ones that are most likely. While the walls were being built, a rumor swept Jerusalem that the Messiah was coming. So Suleiman, being a smart guy in that regard, not knowing as much about the Messiah as others would know, brought together some rabbis from Jerusalem and asked about this. And then on the next page, they did this. They described the Messiah as a great military leader who would be sent by God from the east. He would enter the Eastern Gate and liberate the city from foreign control. Now, of course, the Jews are still waiting for the Messiah, and that's unfortunate. They don't believe or want to believe that the Messiah has already come. Of course, this is the single major sticking point. It's very saddening to me because I was that person once who believed the Messiah had not already come, and we were still waiting for the Messiah. And Jews who know the Bible well and generally, for the most part, most Jews don't know the Bible. They know very little. They know very little about the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. That's another saddening part. It's available. It's there. They go to school. They learn how to prepare for bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs. And in the process of doing that, they learn a lot about how to conduct this ceremony, how to read what's given to them to read on their particular day. But they learn very little. Even prior to that, in going to school, they learn a lot of history. They do. They learn a lot of history. But spirituality really is kind of taking a back seat to that. I don't think it's changed much. And that's the bad part. Okay? But we know the truth. And that's the most important thing. That the Messiah has already come. And he will come again. For the second time. Okay? But Jews don't believe that. So what happens? The Suleiman listens to them and he believes them because, heck, they're rabbis. They know everything about what's going to happen, right, with the Messiah. So what does he do? Second bullet. He decides to put an end to Jewish hopes by ordering the gate sealed. And, oh, yeah, that's going to stop Jesus. Oh, wouldn't it? It's absurd, but you know. First of all, he was likely, seriously, legitimately misled. And the Jews are too. They're not thinking about God when they think about the Messiah. Understand that. This description is a legit, accurate description today. A military leader, a great military leader. All right? That's part of the sticking point too, between Jews and reality. They've got that part wrong. That's not accurate. Okay? So what does he do? So he seals it up, and then he goes a step further. And let's read what he says here. He also put a Muslim cemetery in front of the gate, believing that no Jewish holy man would defile himself by walking through a Muslim cemetery. Okay. Somebody must have told him this. If he figured it out for himself, he messed up. Okay. Let's read further. A little subscript for this. Excuse me. Let me get a little drink. You can read on a little bit if you want to while I take a sip. Okay. So, here's what the Muslims believed. They also believed that a Gadol Kohen, the Jewish high priest, generally cannot enter a cemetery. So they bury their dead there. Okay, first misunderstanding. However, the ploy is flawed, as Jewish biblical teaching states that the Messiah will be from the family of King David, who is a descendant from the tribe of Judah, not a Levi, and therefore he's not a Kohen. He's not a priest. He's not a high priest. Sorry, his lineage ain't what you thought it was. You messed up. Also, and I'm not going to get into the details, it's not necessary. Under certain circumstances, a Kohen can absolutely go into a cemetery. Any cemetery. Okay? So that's flawed as well. Well, there you go. So the wall stays sealed. Good. Good. That's what we were expecting. Keep it sealed. It's not ready. Okay? Okay. Let's go to the bottom of this page and see what we got. Okay. So here we go. Here's some modern day shots, literally, at trying to open the wall. So what happened in 67, during the Six-Day War, as it says, some members of the Jewish military suggested catching the Jordanian defenders of the city off guard by blowing up the sealed Eastern Gate. Didn't happen. But, and here's why it didn't happen. But the leader of the military unit, an Orthodox Jew, vehemently protested the idea, stating that, here we go, thank you, quote, "The Eastern Gate can be opened only when the Messiah comes." Okay, that's good. That's very good. So look how he said, can only be opened when Messiah comes. He should have said, what should he have said? He should have said, only when the Messiah comes again. But he's a lost Jew, so he doesn't think he's even shown up yet. He's wrong. Okay, down to the bottom bullet. In 1917, prior to the period we just talked about, Muslim leaders in control of Jerusalem tried and failed to break the prophecy and open the gate. This is great. On the exact day that the workmen were preparing to demolish the gate, the city of Jerusalem passed out of Muslim control and into the hands of the British. So everybody took their tools and their explosives and went home. So what happened here? God intervened, right? I mean, right? What else? Coincidence? Okay. I don't think so. We look at a lot of things in life and think of them as being coincidental. And I guess that some things are legitimately coincidental. But some of these bigger ticket items, I'll call it, and even some smaller ticket items are not coincidental. They're by design, not by our design. Either God's action or God's restraint causes things to happen, and we look at them and think, and some of us look at them and say, oh, yeah, it's a coincidence. Just a chance meeting, a chance occurrence. No, I don't think so. I think this is a good example of one that wasn't. And I think that if you go back one up further up the page, where the leader of the unit made a decision not to do it, what if he hadn't been a protester, and he had not said, "Don't do this," for whatever reason? I believe that God would have stepped in and put another barrier in place of his protest to stop this from occurring. So we thank God for all of the things that he provides. The most important thing that he provides is our salvation. And we can't appreciate anything more than that. And for that, we are in close for today. Thank you very much.